Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to episode 32 of The School for Dumb Women, the podcast where us three dummies try to learn about things we should absolutely already understand by now. This week, we're all scared that with the current unstable political climate, we might accidentally become the leader of a party in the imminent future. I'm your hostwoman, Hannah Varrell, and I'm a jealous witch, so I've joined the Green Party. With me is, hopefully it won't be UKIP, Alexandra Haddo.
Two of my ex-boyfriends have been deported, Hannah, so sadly I'm in prime position for it at the moment.
And future President of the United States, Caroline O'Donoghue.
I'm going to build a wall, Hannah, and paint a duck egg blue and put my boyfriend's art on it.
That is adorable. This week we're learning about the potentially evil Rothschild family, why they stopped being boobs in films,
and then quickly started again,
and why pickles are so absolutely disgusting. So by the end of it, you'll be able to put rich families in a jar with vinegar and pass the time until they're ready to eat by looking at porn. Let's go!
So Alex, you've had a tiresome journey today and you've arrived in a bath of money. What's that all about?
Yes, the tube was particularly awful, Caroline. Mm. I had to get the lifts. Yes, I'm trying to get myself in the mind of my topic today, which is the Rothschild family.
Ah, yes.
Yes.
An early curios of the Dumb Women podcast. I remember in our first or second episode, I didn't know who they were, and I had to wait this long to find out.
Indeed, and not a moment later. I remember that we were talking about the Rothschilds, and also this week, the magazine that I was working at, I had to research David de Rothschild.
Oh, de Rothschild.
De Rothschild.
Wowee.
Who is a seemingly quite lovely man, actually. He's an explorer, of course he is. Mm. But he means well, and he's doing a lot for sustainability. And I was thinking, well, maybe, you know, because what have you heard about the Rothschilds?
It makes me think of the Illuminati, and yeah. All I know about them is they have lots of money, and I assume from that they are evil.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's basically what I knew about them before I started researching today, that they were potentially evil and had lots of money. Hmm. And some people still believe that to be true. There's a lot of differing opinions. Just a very quick background. The Rothschilds are a banking family. Some people think they own 80% of the world's wealth.
Whoa.
Wait, some people think? Is it that quite vague then?
Yes, the whole catch-22 is, I just want to give a tiny bit of background, they started banking in the mid-18th century, and the first Rothschild to kind of set up his own bank had five sons, and then he dispatched them to all the financial capitals of Europe time, one each.
Oh.
So there was one in London, one in Paris, one in Vienna at the time. One in Stockholm, I think, and one in Geneva. The five biggest European financial capitals of the time. And that's kind of the beginning of how they managed to get so global.
That's like a Shakespeare play, like my five strong sons to the five strongest cities.
Yeah.
Are they American or English or what?
They are German.
Oh, plot twist.
Yeah.
I thought they were American too.
Yeah.
Well,
I kind of thought they were like the Rockefellers.
Well, yes, they are. But they bought some of the Rockefellers' business quite recently. It's huge. They're huge. There's an American wing now. There's an every possible country wing because, I mean, the guy has five sons. He was one of, you know, however many brothers. There's a huge dynasty, essentially.
Right.
That's taken 250 to 300 years.
Question.
There's a lot of...
Can the Rothschilds make women?
They marry them.
Oh, do they marry them?
Oh God, do they marry them? But when you're reading all the stuff about them, because I love a conspiracy theory,
of course.
And the main conspiracy theories are that they control government because essentially whenever the government needs a loan, they borrow it from the Bank of Rothschild. So they have a say in things, essentially.
Yeah.
They started wars and funded both sides to profit from it.
Right. That doesn't sound like a very nice thing to do. Carry on.
No, and the Illuminati and that sort of, you know, essentially they're in control of the world, not governments.
Right.
That's
right.
All, it's sort of intrinsically linked. However, most of the things I read said that this is actually the result of a lot of anti-Semitism because they're Jewish.
Oh.
And then, you know, you read all this stuff and it's like, yes, they are insanely wealthy, but it's nowhere near 80% of the world's wealth. The war rumour came because they ended up lending the government money in the Napoleonic Wars, the British government. And because the government at the time had no money, they borrowed a loan from Rothschild. The Rothschilds didn't court the war.
Right. So they didn't say to Napoleon, like, oh, the British are being mean about
Yeah,
you.
Exactly. And also, obviously, they had a French wing as well.
Yeah.
Because one of the sons was dispatched to Paris.
So then it makes sense that they'd give money to France as well if France asked for a loan.
Exactly.
They did or not. I don't know.
But, you know, I actually think there's a lot of exaggeration. And because of the wars, obviously the Second World War is extremely anti-Semitic. Oh, and the worst rumour is, they are a Jewish family. The worst rumour is that they started the Holocaust on purpose.
Oh, no.
To create sympathy for the Jewish people and in order to create the State of Israel.
Oh, is this the same kind of conspiracy theory that's led by people who think that the Holocaust, the numbers aren't real or whatever?
Probably, yeah. So actually, when you read about it, I mean, I love a conspiracy theory. And I don't think that it's 100% not true that they've got a hand in certain government. But that's just because big business does have a hand in government quite a lot.
Yeah.
However, sadly, I was kind of on the side of it's probably not as bad as you think. But then I read so much of it today that I started thinking, well, if they control
maybe
that
they're
much,
planting that information for you to
they're
find.
Planting that information and they've got so much control over the media.
Yeah.
But so much of the internet really did seem to say that the conspiracy theories are wrong. However, the one that did hold a little bit of water was that they were involved, allegedly, in the assassination of JFK.
Oh.
So this is another rumour that they own the Federal Reserve of America, which everybody thinks is state-owned, but it's not. It's privately owned.
And that's a bank, right?
Yeah, that's
a bank.
I
vaguely remember that from episode one when
exactly.
I was trying to work
what
out
is money?
What
money.
Yes.
No, very famous, what is money?
Yeah.
Yes.
So in a nutshell, the rumour is that Rothschild, under various names and companies and, you know, offshoots, basically owns the majority of the Federal Bank. JFK tried to stop that by starting a state bank, and actually some notes were printed that didn't say Federal Reserve of America, they said United Bank of America or something similar, basically a different name. And there was some fives and some ten notes printed, started in circulation. He was trying to make sure that, I guess, sort of a communist
idea. Yeah, sort of decentralising the world's economy kind of thing.
Yeah, and he was trying to sort of make it a, you know, a public bank, not a privately owned bank that was kind
of
government constantly had to be in debt to in order for that bank to have an interest in keeping it.
Oh my God, JFK would have loved Bitcoin.
Exactly,
he would have been
right?
a Bitcoin man down the pub, wouldn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah, he'd have been like, look, I bought loads of these. I don't know why he's a cockney.
I bought loads of these. Jackie loves them.
I've got to keep this accent so the feds don't fire me. But yeah, he in 1963, he started this changeover, and then in November 1963, he was shot.
And
fuck me.
And there's even a rumour that Lyndon B. Johnson, who took over from him, was in the pocket of the Rothschilds.
Oh.
And he orchestrated it.
But wasn't LBJ, wasn't he a bit of a socialist too?
I don't know enough about that. Although I didn't go down that thread because otherwise I would have been honestly sitting here telling you about the assassination of JFK.
Yeah.
But you know, there is something dodgy about the JFK assassination. I'm not saying it's the Rothschilds because obviously Lee Harvey Oswald, it was a very strange situation, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, yeah. All the men in my family are deep into JFK.
It's one of the, you know, one of those things where you think something has gone on here. That was weird.
Just get my brother on to talk about it.
Yeah.
Next guest.
Yeah. But, you know, that's the only one where I could see a motive. The rest of them, maybe the Rothschilds aren't that evil. Like, they're they're probably not angels because that amount of money and power, some shit will have gone down.
Yeah, it's got to corrupt you. Like, it just has to, doesn't it?
But all I'm saying is that this David de Rothschild, who's only about 40, he sailed around the world on this boat made of recycled plastic to highlight the plastic thing. And that was 10 years ago. And so now his kind of message is picking up momentum because now we're all finally aware of plastic.
Yeah, because that picture of the seahorse in the straw.
Yeah.
Couldn't they just buy all the companies that create objects with plastic and then be like, right, you're not using plastic anymore, you're now using glass or cardboard?
Maybe they could, but only David is the good guy, maybe. Only one man, Hannah.
And when did the de Rothschild come into it? Because does that mean of Rothschild?
Yeah, but I think that is the original name. It's just that people shorten it to Rothschild.
Oh, I didn't realise that.
It's actually David Mayer de Rothschild. And Mayer de Rothschild was the original Rothschild. His first name was Mayer.
Oh, it does sound more German.
Yeah. And Rothschild in German literally means...
rich child?
No. It means red sign.
Oh. What does that mean? Symbolically.
We don't know. It means in reference to some houses where the family lived or had lived. Oh. But that's probably older than the original Rothschild, isn't it? Right. It's probably just a German name.
If I may posit a theory, are people's conspiracy theories about the Rothschilds a little bit like people's conspiracy theories about Hillary Clinton? They're like, they see a rich person who is obviously caught up in loads of different stuff that has different degrees of shadiness and definitely isn't totally like a white knight. And it's not all that clear what they do and what they don't do. So you assume the worst and you're like, well, that's the symbol of evil.
There's a lot of stuff that there's a lot of people that have tried to write biographies and, you know, really research them. And what they've said is they can't find any truth to the conspiracy theories, but they also can never get to the crux of actually how they operate either.
Oh.
Is there like a central sort of puppeteer of the Rothschild family?
Ooh, great question, Hannah.
Thank you.
Not these days. And that's why what Caroline said is probably is very similar to Hillary Clinton, but it's spread over hundreds of people. So some of them probably
are. And like a century.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, 2.5 centuries.
Fuck me.
So some of them probably are. Like the one I was looking at, the younger guy, the eco warrior, he's probably
I'm sure there are some rich people in the world who are sound.
Yeah.
There has to be at least two.
And I'm sure some of them are completely controlling governments all over the world.
Do they feed into the David Icke theory of being lizard people? Are they lizard people?
I love David Icke and his craziness. That kind of was hinted at once, but that's the real, like, you know, wacky end.
Show me the lizards. I just want the fucking world run by lizards.
It would make so much more sense than, like, the actual way we see the world now, wouldn't it?
Yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
Like, oh, you're born and you die and that's it.
Right?
Like, no, lizards.
Lizards. Yeah. When I first, like, became an adult and I heard about the David Icke lizard theories, I was like, that's mad. People are mental. And the older I get and the less the world makes sense, I'm like, no, there's an evil lizard conspiracy running the world.
Yeah.
Ask, you've brought an enormous noisy machine into the studio this week and it's very, very slowly printing a scale model of the Eiffel Tower. Is this part of this week's podcast or have you robbed a startup again?
I actually borrowed it from a friend in order to illustrate this week's Women Who Code Mixer. As you know, each week in our Women Who Code Mixer, we learn about some element of the technology industry so that we can become less dumb and potentially still have employment in 10 years when the robot uprising is complete.
I'm ahead of the curve because I'm actually a robot already.
In this week's Women Who Code Mixer, we're answering a question posed to us by listener Rasheen Healy on Twitter. Rasheen asked, what do you put in a 3D printer? Can we put in fabric and make a jumper? Can we print a 3D printer and return the printer?
Ooh. Ooh.
Thrifty, Roisin.
Yeah. I feel like what do you put in a 3D printer is Graham Norton's new how do you solve a problem like Maria?
This was an excellent question from Roisin. Thank you very much, Roisin. And it had many sections to it, so I'm going to break it down and try and answer them one at a time. Firstly, what is 3D printing? Generally, it's a process of additive manufacturing, meaning something is made by adding material in layers. You know, you do one layer and then another layer and it gets taller and taller and then you have the Eiffel Tower. So that's fairly simple. What do you put in a 3D printer? It depends what you want to get out of it. So if you're making a toy, you might use plastic. I think they make Lego bricks with 3D printers.
Ooh.
Cool.
What are the other Danish people doing? That's their whole purpose, isn't it? Just fashioning bricks.
Waffles? No, that's Belgium.
No, ham?
Ham, yeah.
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 And hygge. Although that's not fashionable anymore.
No, that is out. Hygge's out.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, who knew?
If you're making a bowl, for example, you could use clay. So you can do ceramic 3D printing. You still have to put it in the kiln and everything, but, you know, still quite cool. Later this year, a metal 3D printer is expected to come onto the market, which could save companies loads of money in the long run because metal things are kind of hard to make and expensive. And yeah, and there have been prototypes of 3D printers that print metal things before, but they've just been dead slow and very expensive.
This sounds like the preamble to the first few scenes in iRobot, when like Will Smith hates all the robots because they took his dad's job. Like, are we taking all the potters and metal workers' jobs away from them?
Oh, probably eventually, yeah.
I don't think pottery can afford this as an art. Do you know what I mean? It's already struggling. It's limping along. It does not need 3D printers.
Yeah, but people still like the little handmade stickers, don't they?
I guess.
So I guess we'll just rely on those tiny, tiny stickers.
Guys, I feel like Black Mirror and technology at this time, I feel like we're all going to die.
Yeah, we need some Xanax with the woman who code mixers next time in the goodie bag.
Yeah, well, let me just make it worse.
Oh!
There's also a thing called bioinks. If you put bioinks into a 3D printer, I mean, not just any printer, obviously a special printer, you can print human organs, which is obviously huge and really exciting, but also kind of scary.
If someone would like to print me a new liver after my 30th birthday this year, that would be great.
Yeah, I've got a pretty fucked up gastrointestinal system from some Rivita thins I ate earlier.
So. Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, I think that's why I've got that trapped gas now.
I'll just print you a new fart. One that can pop out.
Beautiful. And finally, Rasheen's last question. Can we put in fabric and make a jumper? Technically, yes, you could, but it would kind of be weird and plasticky. There are a few people that have been 3D printing clothes, and it was really tricky at the beginning because people were kind of using plasticky materials, but they were really rigid. So someone would kind of sit down and their jumper would crack off and they'd be naked in the middle of the exam hall.
Oh my God. So Freudian.
There is a company called Ministry of Supply, which is 3D printing clothes made out of other types of material. So like blends of wool and sort of plasticky things. But like weaving and stuff, sewing has been around for ages. At the moment, it's still better and nicer and more flexible.
Ah, surely 3D printers are just machines. Machines already make clothes, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, because you can get obviously weaving machines and machines that make material.
Sewing machines.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a technicality almost to be
Like, why do we need it?
Printed this.
It's kind of reinventing the wheel, isn't it?
A little bit. Yeah. A little bit. Yeah.
Can somebody print me a glass of wine? When's that going to come in?
You can 3D print food as well.
What?
Yeah.
I was going to make that as a joke.
No, NASA are trying to work out how to 3D print food for astronauts in space. Mm. Cool, huh?
But then it'll be that thing where, like, your computer won't link up to the printer and then you can't have any dinner.
Yeah.
I know, we haven't even mastered wireless printing for regular paper.
Yeah, exactly.
And we're supposed to do in NASA. Fuck off. Yeah.
But like, Dave, I've stolen your lunch money again. By that, I mean I've delinked your computer.
But obviously, you still need to put the raw materials in. So if someone was to 3D print you a glass of wine, they'd need to put wine into the printer
and molten hot sand.
Print it, yeah,
for the glass.
Exactly. So Rasheen's last question: can we print a 3D printer and return the printer?
Very good, Rasheen. Thrifty girl. That's what
genius.
We like to see.
Absolutely. According to an article from 2015, it is possible to 3D print the components of another 3D printer, but you might not be able to print all of its electronics. And then you'd also have to assemble it, which I bet would be a huge faff. So I'm not sure.
Yeah, probably not.
Maybe soon.
Also, Hannah, because of AI, it wouldn't print itself because then it would feel like it might become obsolete.
Possibly.
Maybe.
I feel like 3D printing is going to go the same way as the soda stream. It's going to get cheaper and cheaper. Suddenly every single household is going to have one. And within 2 years, people are going to be like, why do I have this?
Why don't we just pour the glass of wine?
Yeah, we were fine when we were buying cola before. Yeah. Like, it was fine.
It's the mini disc of the printing world, isn't it?
Thing we think we need that actually we only need in a very specific number of scenarios.
Yeah, definitely. Well, anyway, thank you, Rasheen, for your question. If you would also like to submit a question to the Women Who Code Mixer or to the podcast in general, you can get in touch on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram
at dumbwomenpod
or email
dumbwomenpod@gmail.com. Caroline, you have a lovely set of boobs there. Why are you hiding them?
Well, aside from it being incredibly chilly outside, I can't show my boobs because that's what modern censorship is.
Oh.
If you go on Instagram, you can't show your nipples. If you go on outside, you can't be naked there. So that's a very roundabout way of me introducing the fact that I'm talking about censorship today.
Oh.
Yeah. And like lots of things, you think that censorship is sort of like a straight line upwards, especially when you think of entertainment and film and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
We all think of old movies and we think of very conservative values. We think of like women in dresses and dancing and like, oh, you gotta have my suit has got me, have to have me on by 10 and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And specifically, I think we're thinking of movies of like the 50s and 60s, the sort of big lush musicals with Judy Garland, and everything seems like much more innocent. And I think that's why a lot of people watch old films, because they love that kind of sense of the innocent time.
Yeah.
No, no. So it turns out that movies were like super fucking sexy and out there and controversial for like a really long time, and then stopped being it in the middle of the century and then started again. It's wild, guys.
Why were the 50s so conservative? Is it like a post-war thing?
It is a post-war thing, yeah.
I think
that's a whole other subject, really. It's so huge, but like, I think it's men coming home from war. Women have been like okay for literally a decade without them, and it's like, no, we have to put everyone into restrictive body wear and give them pink ovens so we can remind ourselves we have penises. Those of us who have not had our penises blown off in the war. But if I can take you back a bit, so I had a little time off of work recently and I spent almost all of it watching old movies in my flat in the dark. And
that sounds nice.
It was fucking lovely, mate. It really, really was. Yeah. I had a great time. And I had this Greta Garbo, if you're, you know, Greta Garbo is this actress who was, you know, most famous in the 1930s. I had a box set of hers that I hadn't gotten around to watching, so I watched all of it.
The idea of her like bringing out a box set just made me laugh.
She's brought out her greatest hits.
And you can see it all on Netflix now.
It's a very good accent, actually.
I don't even know what... She's the one that's famous for not smiling, right?
I want to be alone.
Yeah,
that's her thing. And I was surprised because all of these movies were made between sort of 1932 and 1939, and they were just incredible. They're like she plays these incredibly like promiscuous characters. She plays a lot of bisexuals, a lot of women who are kind of openly very queer. And because this is happening around like the Oscars, where people seem to always be like patting themselves on the back for coming out with like really woke movies.
Yeah.
I'm like, literally in the 1930s, we were doing it better than we're doing now. Do you know what I mean? Like, we're getting actual like bisexual women to play actual bisexual women in like a fun and open, playful way.
Before we realised that that wasn't okay.
Yeah. So I was watching this movie, this 1933 movie called Babyface, where this woman played by Barbara Stanwyck, she sort of like is giving up on life because men are really, really cruel to her. And then she says like, oh, well, I'm just going to work in a strip joint. And then this like man that she's friends with says to her like, no, what you're going to do is you're going to come into your own and you're going to use men and you're going to be strong and you're going to make this work for you. And basically it's like this thing of like, no, like use men for the horrible pawns that they are and take everything from them. And that is literally the kind of movies that were coming out all the time. Like there was all these movies about like strong women who were like getting their own back from men, and they were these incredibly promiscuous, interesting, layered characters who had like limited choices and their lives were bleak, but they were like fucking like angry and cool. And it's like, oh, we still haven't got back to that place where we're seeing movies like that all the time.
Yeah.
I just got really angry.
It's so strange that it, you think progress always goes in a relatively
straight
line.
Yeah, it's like an upward triangle. Yeah.
Yeah.
But so here's what happened. So essentially, the war over censorship in films has been happening since basically films started. In 1897, there was no rules whatsoever. And then the one rule that they had was like, boxing. We can't show boxing because it's violent. Prize fighting is technically illegal, so we won't show that. But it didn't even like make any noise whatsoever. So people carry on. And then in 1907, they start creating like boards that are like, oh, we have to... you know, we have to check that movies are like morally okay. And then all these other boards keep coming up in like different states being like, oh, we need a board here that says it's okay to have in Ohio, a board here that's okay to do it in Florida. And this sort of messes up the whole system. And the Hollywood producers are like, no, this is making everything really annoying.
Yeah.
And like, we can't be waiting for months to see whether a film is okay to show. Yeah. But then something really strange happens around the 1920s, like after the Great Depression, where two things happen at the same time, which is A, the Great Depression, so people are really, really like upset with the establishment in general, a bit like they are now. They're kind of like, look, like I think the way that we look at culture right now, we're looking at like actors and films to like speak for the moral character for our generation.
Yeah.
And people were doing the exact same thing back then. They were hopeless and they were like, no, films, like the most popular form of entertainment in the entire world now, like this is the real boom time when they're really being mass produced, and they're like, no, we should expect a higher moral standing, our children are going to see these films. And then the other thing that happens is that sound films are coming into existence for the first time ever, so more and more people are going to see them, and their influence is becoming greater. They're not just like silent people up on stage anymore, so there's like this growing movement that like, oh no, we need to do something about this. Then there starts to be sort of like people, like religious organizations boycotting films, and because this is the Great Depression and the film's studios are already suffering really, really badly, they need to kind of kowtow to all these mass boycotts and all this moral puritanicalism that's happening in all these small towns. So they're like, okay, we'll do something, because Washington are getting involved, and they're really like, Hollywood is really afraid that Washington are going to be like in their pockets the whole time. So like, fuck, we need to get something done here, we need to put something on paper to get them off their backs.
And you know, this is like the 1920s.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Well, it's the 1930s at this point. And also, like, there was, like, all these, you know, in the great golden age of 1920 cinema, there were all these sort of, like, scandals coming out of classic Hollywood because, like, all these tabloids existed. And there was, like, you know, people who were dying of overdoses. There was people like Fatty Arbuckle, who was, like, this big children's star. He was, like, this big fat guy who was known for taking, like, pratfalls. And he was, like, in a rape case. And, like, Charlie Chaplin was marrying children and stuff. And it just felt like, you know, the more I talk about and think about it, the more I'm like, oh, it was like exactly like right now.
We're
we've accepted a certain behavior for people from so long, and then we suddenly decide that, like, not only do they have to have a pure moral character, but so does the entire industry and everything it pumps out.
Wow, this is very relevant.
Yeah,
2018.
Yeah,
it's just like fashion; it always comes back.
Always comes back around, and obviously, like, I'm not saying that it's the same thing because it's very nuanced and very different, and I think we're talking at the moment about much huger ideas around consent across society and not just in movies. But this kind of puritanicalism is quite similar, right? And this need for films to be like this strong moral thing. So anyway, the executives of Hollywood got this guy called William H. Hayes, who was like a Washington insider, and they essentially hired him to be a lobbyist and to go between Hollywood and Washington and sort of make things okay for everyone and to sort of quell the public outrage.
Wow.
And, you know, make a happy song. So in 1927, Hayes comes up with a list that is now known as the Hayes Code. And it's called The List of Don'ts and Be Carefuls.
Aww. That sounds like he's going to launch into that song. Like, your don'ts and be carefuls are the things you need to learn. Do not get your tits out and do not let your wee burn.
Wow, that was great.
Yeah,
your, like, ability to just come up with songs is incredible. So the don'ts are fairly, like,
yeah. This is so Glamour magazine. Don't feel like you owe him.
Do support your friends.
Yeah. Do just have that spaghetti on a Tuesday. You're worth that.
Like that, but not with carbs. Yeah. So the don'ts are fairly simple, right? They're no profanity, no nudity, no drugs or promoting of drugs, no slavery or whatever.
That's sick.
The be carefuls are a bit more murky, and, you know, they go from everything from, like, no sympathy for criminals, because where there is crime, there must always be a punishment.
Oh, wow. My God. This is, see, this is where it gets into, like, the state really trying to influence
completely.
People.
That's very much like trying to teach a lesson, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And you have to be always respectful of the institution of marriages. There's no first night scenes, they're called. No, like, romances must, like, end with a kiss, not with, like, a, and then they went to bed. Which they did all the time in 1930s movies. People, like, fucked. People were fucking.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So, yeah, the Hays Code comes in. It becomes essentially the law in movies. And it does a number of things really quickly. It gets Washington off Hollywood's back, so they're free to do whatever they want, as long as they have this set of rule book. They get the moralizing public off of their back. But most importantly and most helpfully at all for all those controlling studio heads, at Warner Brothers, etc., was that they now, like, limited the artistic freedom of their writers. So all these, like, playwrights that came from Broadway and stuff and, like, were coming in and bringing their art onto film, we're now like, no, you must make a film where everyone gets married in the end and everyone kisses and crime is always paid for. And yeah, and so basically it allowed these studios to churn out these movies even faster because they had like a formula. Yeah. And then just movies got really, really bad for a long time.
I was going to say, because sometimes really, really old films, you're like, okay, that's a lot more interesting than I thought. But then you watch, like, I don't know, like It's a Wonderful Life, which must be from the 50s
yeah,
or something.
It is, yeah.
And, like, it's good, but it is very moral and it's very kind of like...
Completely, yeah.
Oh, my gosh, I'm so lucky.
It's a very good James Stewart, Anna.
Thank you.
Do you want the moon, Mary? Yeah, so then that kind of carries on for another while. Howard Hughes, if anyone's seen The Aviator with Leonardo DiCaprio.
I have, yes.
He is one of these famous people in the 40s that, like, tries to go up against all the code. And by the sort of 50s and 60s, it's completely broken down because the studios no longer own the theatres and European films are starting to come in and they're really titillating and
Yay,
people are going there.
Yay, Europe!
So then all bets are off and then all these European movies start making all this money because they're so, like, provocative. And then for the same reasons, money, Hollywood goes back into making provocative movies.
God.
And that's when you get the 60s and the 70s and all these auteur movies.
Wow.
And now money rules the world.
Completely.
The Rothschilds probably started all this.
They definitely did. And yeah, and that's basically how we came upon modern censorship. And I just feel like we still haven't got back to, like, that land where, like, Joan Crawford and Betty Davis and all these, like, strong women with weird shoulders would just, like, scream at men. Like, we're still not back there. And that really, like, bums me out.
Yeah, yeah. And we're still way ahead of, you know, when you see an American on a British chat show and they go, like, and I was like, fuck. And then they go, oh, sorry, can I say that on here?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's like, and I was so bummed. Oh, can I say bum on here? Like, oh, get a life, America.
I know. Yeah, start ruining everything for everyone.
Yeah. In summary,
yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hannah, your flavour has intensified recently since you haven't been washing, and as such, you've become very Marmite. people either love you or take you out of their burgers and give you to their friends. Is that right?
That is right, Alex. Yes, I have been pickling myself as an experiment.
Oh, you look very green and knobbly and tasty.
It's gone horribly.
Yes. Oh, God. It's quite a stench.
I do apologise. I was thinking about last week, Alex, you did a whole thing on McDonald's in episode 31. And I was thinking about how anytime I eat a McDonald's burger, I'm like, oh, this is fine. But the thing I hate about it is the pickles, because pickles are gross. And I'm not the only person who thinks this. What are your guys' stances on pickles?
Pickles are delicious.
Love them.
I love when people hate them because they always give them to me.
Same.
What?
Yeah, no. Exact same thought.
Both picklers.
Yeah, it's a complex ecosystem. Do you know what I mean?
I think it has to be 50-50 because I've never yet been eating food with friends and not found someone to give my pickles to.
Mm.
Oh.
And I think it's kind of like evolution, like everything balances itself out for a reason.
Yeah.
So because I hate pickles this much, I basically have never really thought about them. And I've always kind of wondered, what's the difference between a gherkin and a cornichon and a pickle? And why can you get pickled onions and pickled everything? And what's even happening? Do you know what the classic pickle is?
A cucumber?
Yeah.
Yes. See, I didn't even know that.
Denied
information.
I did probably only realise that about 2 years ago. I thought that maybe a pickle was just like a pickle that then we pickled.
Yeah, it just grew from the pickle tree.
Yeah. No, it's tiny, tiny cucumbers, which is sad because, I mean, cucumbers are really nice. They're one of my favourite.
Oh, see, I hate cucumbers.
You know, so do I. They taste of nothing.
Really?
Oh, can you only be one or the other?
Oh, theory.
Team pickle, team cucumber.
Yeah. This is totally going to be like the Angelina and Jen t-shirt of the new century.
This is back like when I was Team Jacob during Twilight.
AKA Team Loser.
Well, it started here, guys. So what are they pickled in? Do you know?
Brine?
What's brine, though?
Vinegar?
Fish?
Oh, God, you guys know a lot about this. Yeah. Well, there's actually two types of pickles. There's the kind of vinegar pickle, as you said, Caroline. A pickle that has been, I'm going to say pickle a lot in this episode.
The button episode.
A pickle that has been pickled in vinegar. And then there's also fermented pickles, which are not pickled in vinegar. And they're like probiotic and filled with tiny little animals and stuff like that. Gross, right?
Do not you just come advert. From the anti-pickling lobby. I refuse to have you ruin one of my favourite foods.
Hannah, I take pickles whole out of a jar of brine and eat them.
So do I. That's so disgusting.
No.
God, we're really getting up again today. I love it.
Caroline, after this, we're going to buy a jar of pickles and eat them on the street.
Yeah. Do you drink the juice?
No. God, no. I'm not an animal.
Is this why whenever we hang out together alone, we're always eating burgers? Always.
I can't remember
the last time we hung out and we didn't get burgers.
Neither can I.
Aw, we're so cute.
Hannah, you can get some chips.
Yeah. Thank you. Some chips and nuggets.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the ones made without vinegar, and they basically put them in a big barrel and weigh them down with stones, and then a layer of mould is on the top.
Ew.
A layer of mould grows, which they scrape it off. And
it feels like a formula for finding out whether a woman's a witch.
Yeah.
Put it in a barrel, cover it with stones.
Does she grow mould?
Would we have eaten those ones? Or are they, like, rare and French?
I think you might have done, yeah. One of the main things that I learnt, which I didn't know, was that pickles actually don't last that long. I think they can get mouldy quite easily. The other thing, like, everywhere in the world has pickles. If you think about, like, kimchi from Korea.
That's delicious.
That's pickles.
Do you not like any pickles?
No, pretty much none. I mean, I can handle kimchi, but it's still a bit gross.
What about pickled onion?
No, horrible.
Anything in the sort of bitter, umami sort of taste palette, are you just against?
But it's the sourness.
See, that's what I'm for, yeah.
Not a fan.
Do you like vinegar?
Yeah, on chips. Like fish and chips kind of vinegar.
I love a fish and chips when they give you a whole pickle.
Oh, nice slimy pickle.
Well, you probably don't need to answer this question because you love them. But one of my other questions was, what is their purpose on this earth?
To cleanse the palate?
To be disgusting and torment me. Yeah, apparently they cleanse the palate. I mean, I've never eaten a pickle and thought, my palate is cleansed. I've only thought, oh God, someone put a pickle in this. So I actually did have to Google that.
I feel like we've gone 32 episodes and this is the most we've ever known about a subject. Yeah, definitely.
This is apparently our pub quiz subject.
I think I'm willfully ignorant about pickles because they're just too disgusting.
You're like those people who like, the Kardashians, who are they? I don't watch reality TV. Yeah. It's like, you know who they are, shut up.
It's like, don't be an idiot.
It sounds like you've got yourself into a bit of a...
Yes!
There we go.
Kardashian.
I was waiting for that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not just you two. People have been enjoying pickles for a long time.
Since ancient Rome.
Guess who it was?
Egypt. Oh, God.
Russia.
No.
No way.
Iceland.
Us.
No, it was the Mesopotamians.
Oh, yeah. They pop up every now and then.
I mean, they might have started somewhere else, but there is evidence that the Mesopotamians started making them back in 2400 BC.
And they're just about ready to eat now.
Wow. Yeah. Pretty much.
Is it like wine? The older it is, the more expensive they are.
Oh, maybe. I wouldn't know.
Let's make some pickle wine, Caroline.
That's brine.
Yes.
And pickling was really good, obviously, because it was a way to preserve food for out-of-season use, for long journeys by sea, going by sea. You could pickle some stuff. Pickled limes, for example, if you want. Quite good for scurvy, apparently.
Yes.
Well, thank God for that.
Yeah. Pickles also have long been considered a beauty aid. Apparently Cleopatra, this is according to the New York Food Museum's pickle page, Cleopatra attributed her good looks to a hearty diet of pickles.
Cleopatra was mad though, wasn't she?
Right.
She bathed in milk, for God's sake. The woman was... She had too much time on her hands.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And Julius Caesar fed pickles to his troops in the belief that they lent physical and spiritual strength.
Oh.
Because they were like, I want this war to be over so that I can stop eating these horrible pickles.
I will not hear a single word more of your pickle slander.
Yeah.
No.
Pickle off.
Anyway, I think that's all I needed to know about pickles. I still think they're disgusting, and I'm appalled that you both like them.
You are wrong.
Oh, I guess we'll find a new host for our podcast. A giant pickle with a mouth.
As custom dictates, we'll end today's podcast with a smart lesson, which is part of our attempt to rid ourselves of our dumbness forever and join the ranks of the true female elite, the smart women. So, as we all know by now, it's not enough to simply excel at work, maintain a sparkling online persona, and do yoga four times a week. To truly be a smart woman, you have to be cultured.
That's right, Hannah. What value do you have as a woman if you're able to code, always have a clean pair of tights, and are on your way to a six-pack to rival Davina's if you can't name a single poet?
Yes, none at all, Alex. Really, none at all. And that's why for today's smart lesson, we've come up with some handy tips to explain exactly how to be cultured.
Ah.
All right, okay, classic one. Reading on the tube or on your public transport of choice.
Yes.
Obviously, the advantages are twofold. You're seen by your co-workers as being a very smart person because inevitably they'll see you on the tube. And also, you don't have to talk to them.
That's true.
Just make sure that it's like 1Q84 or something else by Haruki Murakami.
Ugh.
And the thing about writers like Haruki Murakami is that you can just say something really vague like, oh, I love the way he always has cats. And it's kind of like really coy, like, oh, I have a fringe sort of way. And people will just be like, she gets literature.
Yeah, that's true.
And we have previously learned about how to make sure the book you are reading is Smart Women approved on this podcast. And you can refer back to episode 24 for those tips.
I should point out to some of our dumber listeners, please don't read a book if your preferred method of transport is a car.
Yes, definitely.
And you're driving it.
Yeah. Oh, audiobooks, very good, because then you can cram in all the book and not even try.
Well done. But play it loud enough so that other people can hear you. Yeah.
It's rolling down the windows, the fucking Dostoevsky coming out.
Yeah. You know, blast out War and Peace while, in fact, you've got your headphones in and you're listening to Miley Cyrus.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Another tip in the literature arena, memorize the name of at least one lesser known poet and make sure to name drop them when someone asks why you've been quiet that afternoon. So, for example, oh, I've been reflecting on a beautiful poem by Gabriela Mistral.
Oh.
It's a great way to distract colleagues from the fact that you've been browsing Twitter for a solid half hour.
As is my wont.
Yeah, and you want to get some of the classics in there as well. I'm Irish, so people always ask me about James Joyce and whether I have read him. Fine. I haven't, but I have read some of his love letters about farting that he sent to his wife. And let me tell you, they are erotic and stingy.
Let's also remember the official wanker index, wine. If you're drinking a glass of wine, you want to seem cultured, mention that it's a bit similar to one that you actually found in the south of France when you stumbled across the vineyard in which it's produced.
Lovely. Yeah. Smell it for a long time as well.
Yes, absolutely.
If you're out and about, for example, in a gallery and someone's talking about art to you, you can tell people you enjoy the art of Cy Twombly. So you think it's thought-provoking. And learn to pronounce his name.
Yes, I always thought it was Cy Twombly.
It's Chai Twombly.
Guys, as a comedian, I should say don't laugh at lowbrow comedians. And by that I mean comedians that have just done well enough for themselves to live off comedy. As soon as they hit that, they're considered not very cultural anymore.
Oh yeah, sellouts.
Sellouts. So, you know, don't laugh at Michael McIntyre or Jimmy Carr or anyone that's
or
making
Jack
a living.
Or Jack Whitehall.
No, God no.
Or the blonde one with the lazy eye.
Oh, Russell Howard.
Yeah.
Yes.
Nope.
No, sorry. You can only respect them if they're struggling. My tip is to say you like Stuart Lee, but like if anyone asks you from what's your favourite show of his, just start running. I mean, fast.
Yeah.
Running away.
She's like, oh, you know, the one where he says everyone's full of shit.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's more than enough to be getting on with, and I'm pleased to report we're now 0.1% closer to becoming smart women.
Yay!
Well, that's it for another week. Thank you for listening. Thanks also to Harry Harris for our jingle, Gavin Day for our logo, and Soho Radio Studios for the recording space. If you are interested in sending in a question like Rasheen...
Thanks, Rasheen!
...then you can email us on dumbwomenpod@gmail.com or tweet us, Facebook or Instagram us, @dumbwomenpod. Thank you all. Goodbye!
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 Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.